just to get down. Devin now. I wake up just to get down. Devin now. Hey, I wake up just to get down.
I don't know if they're
develop these bars for the developing stars, whoa. Ranked by their stars though, but they know just who they are. The knowledge is deep, man, cause college is bleak, man. The knees of the bees, man, people's champ, man, true now. I trust them with everything, every conference giving me confidence. Hipping is hopping and really no stopping them. Make you a champion, y'all put a sock in it, woo! But this is life, bro, they're at it all night though. So you can just drive slow and get down with the Devi crew.
I wake up just to get down. Devi now. I wake up just to get down. Devi now. Hey, I wake up just to get down.
I don't know if they're
All right, guys, welcome in. This is Devi Happy Hour, episode 27, the Arian Foster episode. This is the best 27 I could find. I don't know if you guys have any other famous 27s. Anyways, we have a lot on board for you today, our normal weekly previews and stuff, all that. Got some news notes, quick takeaways from week 8. Sorry we missed last week. We just had I had a lot of stuff going on in my life and just kind of everything got caught, and we just took a bye week, so... We're sorry we missed you guys. We missed talking to each other. We missed bringing you guys knowledge. It was a huge week, too. So we're really sorry about that. So we're back. And first, I want to introduce my co-host, Mr. Matt Griffith, the Deltron. How you doing, man?
It feels so good to be back. Man, it feels like it's been a month, but glad to be on here with you boys. Talk some football. I have been running around for work. I was traveling and I got to do a little bit of thermal night pig hunting, which was a blast, but I'm missing some football, man. So back in the mix and glad to be on with you fellas tonight.
Thermal pig hunting with drones and all kinds of crazy stuff. It's nuts, man. You're almost not giving the pig a chance. Come on, man. All right. And we got another co-host, Mr. Ray Garvin. Ray, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Glad to talk to you. Missed you guys last week and excited to get into week 9.
Right. It did feel like several weeks. Like, it feels like it's been just forever. So anyways, we got a little bit of news and notes this week. A really big commit today kind of threw a curveball. I saw this just as I was getting ready for the show. 5-star tight end Eric Gilbert was pretty much seemed like a lock for Alabama. And he flipped right at the last second today and committed to LSU. If you've ever seen this, I was watching some of his high school tape earlier today. Actually, it was like watching LeBron James when he was in high school. Like, the dude is just so big and fast and just so much better than everybody around him. And they would use him in the backfield, you know, line him out wide. And he's just a monster. He's a big dude. I think he's like 6'5", 250, and just moves like he's half that size. So kind of a surprise. LSU's really loading up. They've got a hell of a recruiting class. And look what they're doing this year. So they're definitely going to giving Alabama a run, man. It's just nice to see him switch around. Ed Ogeron is really doing some stuff with that program. So I don't know if you guys have anything to add with that.
Just that this kid reminds me a lot of myself, man. His athleticism, his size. I mean, looks just like – no, I love some tight end love, man, because, you know, rarely do you see players in that position get that kind of highlight. But like you just said, LSU's offense is so much better and so much different from what we're used to in years past that it's not just ground and pound for 3.5 quarters a game. I mean, think of Ja'Marr Chase, this cat, some of these other receivers that they got over there. That offense is beautiful, and I love it because then you could let guys like I'm going to forget the running back's name, their 5-star running back they just picked up last year. Anyways, let him develop it, not have to – there you go. He doesn't have to be – the biggest show in town right now. He's just a piece to it. So I like what LSU's doing right now.
Right, you gotta like it. I mean, it feels like Alabama was just starting to flex and really start to sit to rise above the SEC, and to see them put together this class is pretty damn amazing. All right, so the big takeaways from last week, I know Ray went over it on the DDP last week. Great show. Actually, you didn't go over as much of Week 8 as you did. You did the preseason or the midseason All-Americans, which was absolutely amazing. If you have not had a chance, go stop right now, pause this, go listen to the Destination Debbie podcast from Sunday or Monday. It releases Monday, sorry. It is a great, great episode. A lot of names on there that I was just like, wow, I got to check that guy out. Like guys that I kind of had on my radar, but Ray – always does a good job of bringing them out even more. So well, the biggest takeaway probably from Week 8 was the Tua injury. That's such a huge, huge thing. Do you guys have any thoughts on that? Do you think when he'll come back? Ray, do you got any idea on when you think he'll be returning?
I don't know. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later in the show when we talk about some of the games in the South, but just a tough injury for him overall. I know he's dealt with ankle injuries in the past. I don't know if it's the same ankle. I don't know if it's a different type of injury or what, but it's just unfortunate. One of those weeks where, and I mentioned it on the DDP, the game is always better when the great players are active and they're playing, regardless if you like those teams or not. In this past week, we had Patrick Mahomes go down and Tua go down, and Mahomes is supposed to play, and then Tua's got a high ankle sprain, but he's going to be back in a week. I don't know. It's just it's a bummer for the Crimson Tide team and for college football fans alike.
No, I was just going to say, like, the ankle, multiple ankle thing does make you a little bit nervous, right? You don't want to start throwing around the injury-prone label, but you hate it. Sucks to see, man, and especially, like, I mean, Ray's going to get into it, but they got a pretty big game here in a few weeks, and knowing Tua, knowing, you know, how that team operates, I would be very surprised to not see him on the field, but it'll suck if he's a little too premature still.
Right. I think it's going to, yeah, it would take a catastrophic turn to have him not on the field against LSU November 9th. But at the same time, you know, I think big picture as well. So, yeah, it was just, yeah. I'll let you guys talk about it more. It'll be interesting to see what they do. They should be okay against Arkansas, you'd think. But I thought another team that would be okay was Wisconsin, and they ended up losing. So we were angling toward this huge, huge matchup this week, and then Wisconsin goes and loses to Illinois. So, and they definitely did. That's several weeks in a row where Jonathan Taylor has been not taken out of the game, but made to be look like, you know, like he's almost human. They just key on him, and that scares me a little bit. I think that's why I think a lot of people were apprehensive to rank Wisconsin so high. So, I don't know. Did you have any takeaway from that loss? That was kind of a.
I think that you know, for me, and Jonathan Taylor is still awesome, but, you know, I think it's 1, 2, 3 of his last four games, he's averaged less than 5 yards a carry. Northwestern held him to, you know, 4.6 yards a carry. Michigan State held him to 3.1 yards a carry, 26 carries, 80 yards. Still had 2 touchdowns. And then this past weekend, Illinois held him to 4.7 yards a carry, 28 totes for 132. You know, he's still phenomenal. He's still great. But that is why when things aren't going well in the running game, you have to be able to do something in the receiving game, which he's shown a more improved skill set this year. But he has looked human 3 of his last 4 games, which, you know, after the tear that he started the season off on, it's sort of like inverse. Now DeAndre Swift is starting to pick up some steam and Travis Etienne is starting to ball out a little bit more. So it doesn't deter me from Jonathan Taylor one bit, but he has looked human these past couple of weeks.
Right. And I haven't got to look at it close enough to watch. I've seen the defenses are just forcing them, you know, they're trying to take him out of the game, which is the best way to beat Wisconsin. I mean, that's, you know, they, as good as Jack Cohn has looked at times, he is not, you know, like a legitimate quarterback. So he's not like Graham Mertz, I think, will probably be better there. So, yeah, I'm not at all worried about him overall. I don't know. Matt, if you had anything to add on that?
No, I didn't see the game. Obviously, I'm looking at box scores. I was traveling. But, you know, like you said, the last 3 weeks, he's been under, what, 4 yards a carry. And then, like, at Kent State a few weeks back, and like, 10 yards a carry. That's to be expected, though, right? That's like the Darrell Henderson, Rashad Penny kind of deal where you guys are averaging 9 yards a carry against subpar talent. So, you expect that. But you'd also, you know, he's Jonathan Taylor, right? We want 5, 6, 7 yards a carry even against good competition. But, you know, it's going to be the name of the game, man. Wisconsin's going to run it 35, 40 times a game, you know, as much as they can. And they'll take 3 yards and 4 yards a play, though. So,
Right, right. Do you guys have any other takeaways from week eight? Those are the two big ones that I wanted to bring up. I know there was quite a bit of good action last week. So
Trevor Lawrence, right. Again, I mean, a couple more picks. I still think he's a phenomenal quarterback prospect, but I'm at the point now where I know it was kind of hyperbole. It was tongue-in-cheek to talk about it early in the season. I don't know what on earth I had going. I've got some techno music playing over here. Don't mind that.
The Trevor Lawrence dance party.
The sunshine dance. But I think, it was hyperbole. It was tongue-in-cheek to talk about it at the beginning of the year. But I do think we need to pump the brakes on the best quarterback prospect, since Andrew Luck or of all time or whatever you want to call it. He's got some things he's got to clean up just like everybody else in college football.
Right. And I don't even think we kind of sort of brought it up a couple episodes ago about the Justin Fields versus Trevor Lawrence. And to me, I would take Fields over Trevor right now, 9 times out of 10. I still think Trevor will be okay, but I just like the way Fields looks better. And Fields is kind of seems like he's fallen out of the race, the talk of the Heisman race, but he's still balling out really good. And he's got a couple big games coming up too. So yeah, it's kind of shaping up to be this crazy 4-team race, or 5 teams, if you want to put Clemson. Some people don't think they're worthy of being in the top four, but it sucks that I can't wait for playoff time this year. There's so many little sub stories, with the Ohio State and LSU and the Joe Burrow and then the Jalen Hurts and the Alabama, there's so many ways that it could go. That it could be just like one of the craziest, coolest playoffs we're ever going to probably see. So I'm really, really excited about the postseason this year. So Matt, you got anything, man?
Yeah, you mentioned Jalen Hurts, man. With every week that goes by, his name just continues to creep more and more into first round or into NFL mock drafts, whether it be a 1 round, 3 round. Where, less than a year ago, we weren't even talking about maybe him being drafted like a day three kind of guy. And then, essentially everyone just said Joe Burrow over Trevor Lawrence. So, yeah, I'm on that.
Right, right. There's even some.
I'm teasing.
There is even some talk of Joe Burrow over Tua, which is nuts. Just nuts to me. Like, I don't know. He still only started basically. I mean, Joe Burrow started for 2 seasons, but he's only been like amazing for one. Like he looked very pedestrian at times last year, but he seems to really grasp that offense. And we'll talk more about him later, like here in a moment here. So we're going to go into week 9, the game of the week. This is a huge, huge game. Every week we seem like we talk about a marquee matchup in the SEC, and this is a huge one. At number 9, Auburn goes to number 2, LSU. And Ray, what's the keys to this game for you? Being you're our Dirty South representative, what's the biggest thing to watch for in this game?
Can Auburn slow down that LSU passing attack? And not just the passing attack, the LSU offense, period. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has looked good running the ball. I thought by week 5, if we put a $100 bet on who would be the starting running back for LSU by week 5, I said it was John Emery Jr., hands down. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire has looked really good running the ball. Emery is just a complimentary piece this year. His time will come. But can Auburn and that defensive front generate pressure? Can they slow down what LSU likes to do, which is spread and shred you? And I will be paying attention to that. I think that's the key to the game. And can Bo Nix keep his composure enough and not make the big mistakes, not try to win the game? He's still a true freshman. He's still learning. And it's in Death Valley. Am I correct? Is the game in Baton Rouge? Yeah, it's in Death Valley. Seth Williams, is he going to be able to do something against probably the best defensive back in the country, Derek Stingley Jr.? And Seth Williams, 6'3", 200 almost 30-pound monster out there at wide receiver. It's going to come down to that defensive front. And I know you know more about that D-line than I do, Dwight, but can they generate pressure? Can they make Burrow uncomfortable? Because as good as Burrow has been this year, he really hadn't been pressured. And when you do get in his face, he tends to kind of throw some crazy balls. So I don't know if Big Derek Brown and those guys can generate pressure, but for me, that's the key to that game.
Hey, you hit the nail on the head that right there. I love the footwork of Burrow and what you've seen, but he hasn't faced this intensive pressure yet. So, Matt, do you have anything to add on that game? What are you looking forward to about it most?
There's just so many stars in this game. There's so many studs. There's going to be a lot of guys playing on Sundays. Obviously, I'm a big fan of Ja'Marr Chase, Jefferson. These receivers continue to do it week in and week out. But this is like, man, this is game of the week when this is SEC showdown like this, two top 10 teams. This is great football. There are so many good defensive talent, talented players on these, in this game. You mentioned Stingley, Brown. I mean, man, I'm just looking forward to this one. I'm trying to watch this without even Devy eyes. This is going to be a good football game to watch, man. I'm excited for this.
Right. It's definitely one of those games you have to do that. Like, as much fun as I am Devy and as Devy focused as I am, there are some games that I'll watch and just watch for the sake of football. This will be one of them for sure. All right, Matt, you want to take us out west, bud? What's your game of the week out in the west this week?
Yeah, man. So the game of the week for me is one of these famous Pac-12 After Dark games. Well, I'm hoping it will be one of those games. But Washington State's going to Oregon. So Oregon, number 11 on the year. Their only loss to that Auburn team we just talked about. But they just had a big loss in, or 2 weeks ago, I guess, in Jacob Breeland, who's been the number one receiving weapon for Justin Herbert. But Oregon's still rolling. They have the greatest chance out of the West to make it into that top four, although that chance is not great, but they still have a chance. But, you know, so Justin Herbert, you got to love that. You know, Anthony Gordon from Washington State, and those receivers have just been lighting up Saturdays. They're averaging like 50 points a game, and that's not a real stat. That's just what I looked at when I looked on the game log. They have a couple 60s, a couple 40s. It's just silliness. And then Max Borgi, week after week, just continues to perform and be this guy that I, you know, got to fall more and more in love with. I'm really excited for this. I love games in Autzen Stadium. I've told you guys this before. The three receivers, the three-headed monster, you got Patman, Arredondo, and then I'm going to forget the other cat's name, Aesop Winston. They got some receivers up there, man, but it's just how Washington State does their business. So I'm excited for this game. Washington State's been up and down, but they score a ton of points. So if they can keep up with an Oregon team, this could be an exciting game. So I'm really excited to see how this unfolds, and I want to see another week of Max Borgi, who continues to impress.
Yeah, Gordon's one of those players that I really want to focus a lot in the offseason, you know, and watch him closer, because he's putting up just video game numbers and just commanding that amazing offense. And Oregon gets lost in the wash a little bit, how good their defense can be. So, yeah, it should be a hell of a game. So, another one that might be fun to watch without the Devy slant on it, although there's going to be Devy all over that field as well. So,
well, and then you got with the Minshew love, right? Everybody's like all obsessed with that, and not, you know, whatever, but that's how it goes. You have the bias that's there. Gordon could start becoming relevant at some point in time, you know, in a NFL draft realm. So, you know, who knows, man? Well, we've seen weirder things.
Is he a sophomore? I think he is, right? Gordon? I think he's a sophomore.
I just had it up. He is. Yeah. Sorry.
It's all good.
Did you catch up before me? No, he's a senior.
Oh, geez, never mind. All right. So, yeah, he's only going to get one season under his belt, which kind of stinks because that's one of those things that doesn't look as good, you know. But, I mean, I think Minshew's success has to be a good, you know, a little bit of a good thing for him, though. So I can't think of the word I'm looking for. Anyways, Devy Prospect of the Week, man. I thought we talked about him before, and I can't believe we haven't. I absolutely love this kid.
See, I did a double check, too. I thought we did, but I don't think we have, right? Am I wrong there? But my Devy Prospect of the Week is Zach Moss, running back out of Utah, who Ray and I have talked to in a little bit more in depth, and I want to say it was on the DDP or it might just been BSing, but I haven't been the biggest fan. He's got the size, the epitome of what you want in an NFL back in 5'10", 222. He's a senior. He's a Florida kid. He's related to Santana Moss and Sonora Moss, those guys who are legends down there in the Florida world. 613 yards on the ground on the year, 8 touchdowns, and 6.6 yards per carry, which is nice. You got to like that. And as of this last weekend, he's Utah's all-time leading rusher. So, you know, he's got that going for him. He's more of a two-down guy, which is a knock. I mean, it just is what it is. But it doesn't prevent people from getting to the NFL, and it doesn't prevent people from keeping jobs either. So we see that. It obviously, it's not a plus for him. He runs his ass off, though, and sometimes he just flashes, and it's going, whoa, okay, maybe I'm way too down on him. And then sometimes he'll have a run, like, immediately after that and go, nah, I think I'm about right. So it's harder to evaluate him. He just came off a huge week, though. They're playing Arizona State this week. Arizona State underperformed last week. actually the last 2 weeks, right? And then so I don't know, man. I think he's got a good week ahead of him. I think that defense from Utah is so good that it keeps him on the field. They get the ball back a lot. That team's kind of underrated too, but they only have one loss on the year. Anyways, I just think Zach Moss could have another really good week, and I know he's definitely impressing a lot of people that I talk to, and he's climbing rankings. I'm just not there yet on moving him up on mine, but I think he is a talented back and has some potential. I just don't exactly know what that looks like, and I guess we'll find out on draft day.
Ray, where do you have Zach in your 2020 running backs? Probably, if you don't know exactly.
Probably outside of my top 15.
Wow.
Probably outside of my top 15. But here's the thing, and Matt made a great point. I think people get so enamored with the elite guys, with the Travis Etienne's and the DeAndre Swift's. There's only so many of those guys, right? And then there's a whole different crop of running backs. And if you get drafted, it only look at Kerryon Johnson, Aaron. It only takes one injury for a guy to be elevated to a role where they're usable fantasy assets. So what I say is I agree with Matt. Even if he's just a two-down guy, if he's drafted, if he makes a roster, you're going to want to have him on your team, even if it's just a depth piece, because you don't know when you're going to need to insert that guy. And I think Zach Moss is somebody for – do I think he can do it for a full 16 or 14? Probably not. But if he needed a spot start, or he had to start a couple of weeks because, you know, Damian Williams was down and you had to plug and play him, I think you'd be just fine. So people, and even me, you have to get out of that mind frame of, oh, he's not Travis Etienne. Well, how many Travis Etienne's are there? They're only a handful of those guys. And then everybody else is, I don't want to say just a regular running back, but not everybody is elite. So like Matt said, he can run the ball. I mean, damn it, he can run the ball, and he's going to find a role in the NFL, and whatever that role may be, you never know when his number's called, and he can run the ball.
Right, yeah, I really like his size and his toughness, so good call, man. Freshman, who you got for your freshman of the week, Matt?
So I became really impressed with Kyle Phillips, the receiver at UCLA. So he's a redshirt freshman. He played in a couple of games last year, had a concussion, and they kind of strategically didn't rush him back so that he could take his medical redshirt. He's been playing his butt off, and he's second in the team in receptions, second in yards, and first in touchdowns with 31 receptions, 342 yards, and four touchdowns. That offense hasn't been what I think a lot of people were hoping it to be a Chip Kelly offense, but Kyle Phillips has been playing well. He's a four-star recruit. He had offers from everyone from Michigan to Vanderbilt to Arizona State, Wazoo, Northwestern, you name it, but he stayed SoCal and went to UCLA. That crazy game against Washington State a few weeks back where it was like 60 to whatever, 100, whatever that game was, he won the Pac-12 player or freshman of the week. He had a really, really beautiful punt return for a touchdown, like 70-yard punt return for a touchdown. He is sneaky good at football. He has really good at route running. He has some really impressive tape running like at a wide receiver camp where he's running against really good DBs from the West and with really good receivers from the West. He is embarrassing defensive backs at this camp. And that's different. It's like, the passing camps or whatever. But when you can highlight, you can highlight. When you can kind of showcase yourself, it's no question to me. Like, I mean, I wasn't confused at all why he was a four-star recruit. He is really good. I think he'd really benefit from like a alpha receiver on a team. Like if he had a, like one of these 6'3", 220-pound guys, but it's like him, Felton, who's like a kind of receiver, kind of running back. They don't really have that guy down there. If they did, I think he'd be even better. I think he's 5'10", like a 190, something like that. He's not great size, but really good route runner, could be a really good slot receiver. And as that relationship with the quarterback develops and that offense, I think he's going to continue to get better and better. But I'm very impressed with this kid. Definitely making it onto my watch list to pay attention to with the future UCLA games.
Very good, man. I like it a lot. Matt, it's time to go deep.
We're going deep. And I'm also keeping it freshman. And this is just because, you know, I'm sure Ray was paying attention, but SC had like everyone in their backfield get hurt in the past 2 weeks. Malapai's down, Stephen Carr's down, Steps down. I mean, everybody's hurt. And in comes this freshman three-star recruit from San Diego, who is, I mean, we need to get the foot race going between him, Chuba, and Etienne. This kid is fast. So he had 8 carries last week for a 103 and 2 touchdowns in his first ever start, in his first ever carries, just smoking. I tried to verify this. So what I understand is he ran a 10-3 100 in state 2 years ago or last year, and won state in the 100. He actually won state in the 200. He won section in long jump and all these other things too. But he holds the California record for the 100 right now. That's been he tied it. I'm sorry, and it's been tied now, or it's been that 10-3 for like 25 years. That kid is fast. I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch him play, Ray. I don't know if you got to go back and watch this game. He has, you know, sometimes when there's a blatant hole, you got a hole, fine, go hit it. He needs just a very small hole, and he is so dang fast that it was, boom, gone. Shot out of the cannon, see you later, and terrible angles on the defenders, see you later. So it was, okay, freshman, whatever, wrap it all up, do the post-game interviews. Super humble, super chill. Hey, our motto is fight on, bro, SC. I'm just plug and play. Coach told me to be ready. I'm ready to go. Next week, right? Oh, what are you going to do now, Keenan? It's your first big start. Hey, it's game day. We're just going to practice like we always do. Get ready to go out here and play. I'm like, dude, I love it. So I'm a fan of this kid. He was fifth string running back starting off the season. Probably was going to redshirt. Had no business even getting out there. And I believe it was a running back coach too. It was like, I've never seen in my 20 years 4 or 3 running backs get hurt within whatever he said. He said 25 hours of each other, whatever it was. Dude, watch this kid. Go back and watch this game. If you want to see speed, he turns it on, and he even mentions it too in some of his interviews. He doesn't want to be one of those track guys who they try to convert to a football player. He's a football player. He's a track guy. He's all of it, and it translates. He shows that it's not just one or the other. Very impressed, man, and I love seeing him in a SC uniform too, you know. So I can't wait to see what he does in a full-time role this week.
Nice. I like it, man. And if any of our listeners are wondering, the 100 record was held by Matt Griffith. So yeah, Matt's done it all. He's big. He does, and he's fast too.
25 years ago, I was 10 years old. No, the other thing too is, and I know most of you guys have seen Nick Chubb running track in high school, those photos, those videos, and it just looks like a bodybuilder running 100 meters, and it looks silly. Keenan's not quite the Nick Chubb on the track. On the track field, but when you watch him run against the other kids, like when you watch his track tape, all the other kids look like skinny sprinters. This kid's just, you know, jacked shoulders. And so it's funny watching the kid win state, and he's twice as big as the next kid out there lined up with them. So I don't know, man. I love it. I'm jacked about this. So, and for the record, I don't own the 100 meter shot put. Yes. Not the 100 meter. Anyways. And then, so other intriguing games sticking in there, SC at Colorado. You know, SC's defense played great last week. Keaton Slovis did enough. Obviously, this kid Keenan Kristen, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. And then Colorado, man, they're coming off 3 straight losses. It's just weird. I have so much more hope for them, I guess. I want to see them be good. I want like the headline next week to be like Laviska Shenault's a freaking monster. But it's, I don't know, maybe my expectations are too high. I'm always watching the SC game, so I think this should be another SC win. They're going up to Boulder, though. I don't know. I'll be interested to see this game. I'll be watching this one.
Right. Can't go wrong there, man. All right, Ray, you ready, man? Take us down south, baby.
All right, down south. Game of the week. All right, hear me out here, because it really should not be a good game. I believe Arkansas has won 2 games on the season. They're 2-5, last in the SEC West. But it's Arkansas versus Alabama, and this one is all about Bama. Like, this is – it's what we talked about to start the show off. They are without their all-world, one of the greatest college quarterbacks of all time, Tua Tagovailoa, will not be on the field for the Crimson Tide. Insert Mac Jones, and we saw a little bit of Mac Jones last week versus Tennessee. It was not pretty. Now, granted, he didn't practice with the first team offense. He was thrown in the middle of that game, you know, in the middle of the game. So it's kind of unfair to judge him based off of that performance, but it just didn't look good. It did not look good. So he's had a week to practice, to prepare for this game. It should be one of the easier matchups, but let's see. And what I want to talk to you guys about now is it's sort of, we use that, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? And a lot of people have debated, did Tua make the wide receivers or did the wide receivers make Tua? Now, Mac Jones was a three-star recruit. I looked it up. He was the 399th ranked player in the 2017 class, 18th ranked pro-style quarterback. So he does not have the high pedigree of Tua, but he's also not just some, you know, walk-on kid off campus. So he's got a little bit of talent. Is he going to be able to get the ball to Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs? A lot of people seem to think anybody can go play quarterback at Alabama, but as we saw when he came into that game versus Tennessee, everything was off. I mean, he was down the field, but other than that, it was hand the ball to Najee Harris, and then we're going to run some trick play towards the goal line, and some other rando Alabama player threw in a touchdown pass, some Tim Tebow jump pass. But let's see if, you know, he can distribute the ball against an inferior team. And what does Alabama look like? Because this is big. It's not just about Alabama this week, but Dwight, you said it. Yeah, they've got LSU coming up in 2 weeks. So this is about Alabama long term. If Tua is out, if he's not going to be playing for the foreseeable future, and even if he comes back, if he has a high ankle sprain, he is not going to be the same quarterback. He's not going to have the same mobility. He's not going to be the same quarterback that he was prior. It's just not, it's not going to happen. Maybe they've got some crazy witch doctor down in Tuscaloosa who can put his leg back together, but I don't see how that is possible. Even Saquon Barkley this past Sunday versus the Cardinals, returning from his ankle sprain, there was a play where he limped off the field, and he's probably one of the most athletic freaks of our generation. So I'm really intrigued to see what this Alabama team looks like. They've dealt with a ton of injuries this year, but you know what? Nobody's feeling sorry for Alabama. So step up and perform, Mac Jones. Nick Saban, put this quarterback in a position, ride Brian Robinson, and get the job done.
And to continue with our 2000s rap references, Mac Jones. No, I'm just kidding. Every time I hear his name, I can't. I want to do it, man. So, and you got to think that Arkansas's got to be smelling blood in the water too. This is their chance, you know. Like, this is it. Like, I bet these kids are going to be coming. They're going to come into Tuscaloosa just ramped up, you know. So it should be a fun one.
For me with this, and really before Tua, Alabama wasn't known. I mean, Alabama now feels like it's Tua's team. But before this, it wasn't that long ago that it was just Nick Saban everything. Nick Saban over everything. And he was doing it with the likes of A.J. McCarron's and Greg McElroy's and whatever else. He's kind of game-type manager players where the offense looked different, yes. But it was Nick Saban who was orchestrating this whole thing. And I feel like, Mac Jones gets thrown in the game and it looks different, looks off for sure. I totally get it. 5 days, though, with Nick Saban adjusting, cleaning it up, doing Nick Saban business. There's a reason he's the highest paid employee in the state of Alabama, right? This is his job. He will be able to make Mac Jones efficient enough or put in position well enough to get – you have superstars in the receiver position, running some screens, running some comebacks, running some simple routes, maybe keep it three-step, whatever. It's time for Nick Saban to kind of take his show back, right, not let it just be this Tua thing. So, I mean, if he's a football coach that he gets paid to be, that we all think he is, I think he's a fantastic coach. I'm not, you know, obviously, you know, it's not ideal, right? You don't want to go out there without Tua. But what if they lost Tua week one? He would figure it out. They're going to try and find a way. It may not be as pretty of a game, but I think they're going to find he's going to orchestrate it enough to make this thing work.
See, and you know, because making it work versus Arkansas, okay, you can make it work versus Arkansas. You can't make it work versus LSU. You can't make it work versus whoever you, if you face Florida or Georgia in the SEC title game. Like, they're going to have to score points. And I agree with you. I mean, in the past, I looked it up a couple of weeks ago. I think the leading passer in Alabama over the past like 10 years had like
3,800 yards or something like that. Tua is damn near throwing for 5,000 out there. So it's a completely different offense, but they've got to score. It's different, you know. LSU, Joe Burrow's the second leading passer in college football, not Cole McDonald, not some Texas Tech quarterback, not it's Joe Burrow from LSU. So they're going to have to score points. And that Alabama defense is not the Alabama defense of the past. They're not stopping people and shutting teams down. So I completely agree with you. He'll make something work, but Mac Jones is going to have to deliver with his arm at some point here in the near future if they have a shot to beat LSU. And where they stand right now, I think LSU's defense is better, and I think they're offensively, they're just as talented, if not more, without Tua. Mac Jones is going to have to do it with his arm.
Right, because Alabama's been able to mask their defensive inefficiencies by the fact that they're usually ahead 35-0 in the second quarter. So that's not going to fly against LSU. It should be fun to watch. And, Ray, Debbie Prospect of the Week. I'm surprised.
Listen, Linda, honey, listen. Jalen Reagor, Debbie Prospect of the Week. I haven't talked about this guy since week one. I went back and checked. I've not talked about him in a long time. But this is his opportunity versus Texas to sort of remind people that I'm still talented. I know when I'm not getting the ball thrown to me a lot, because Texas is going to score on TCU. They're going to put up points on TCU, and Max Duggan is going to have to throw the ball, and they're going to have to find a way to get Jalen Reagor involved in that offense. So for me this week, I'm really interested to see. Texas's defense is banged up, so they should be able to take advantage of a weak secondary against UT, and UT is going to put up points. Ellinger and that offense, they're going to score. So this is Jalen Rager's opportunity to kind of show people on a national scale, like, damn it, I'm still here. I'm still one of the top 2020 wide receiver prospects. Look at me. So I'm really intrigued by Jalen Reagor this week and the matchup that he has versus Texas.
Right. I just had to give you a little bit of guff. Sorry. All right, man. So you got, who do you got for us for freshman of the week? This one I love. And I was, before the show, I was trying to claim Memphis as part of the North just so I could talk about this cat. So this cat looks just amazing. So
Kenneth, yeah. Game. Memphis running back. This kid is good. He's a freshman, redshirt freshman. All right. 5'11", about 195. He was a three-star recruit coming out of high school. A lower three-star recruit. His national rank was low, 1,614, according to 247sports.com, 124th ranked athlete. But he has done stuff at Memphis this year that hadn't been done in college football in a very, very long time. I think one of the stats was this past Saturday, he's the first college football player, NCAA college football player, since 1997 to have 200 receiving yards and 100 rushing yards in a single game. On the season, he's sixth in college football in rushing. And I talked about this on the DDP. I know this sounds like a high number in receiving yards. Now, I know a lot of people, he's not top 10, top 15. Well, he's a running back, and he's 85th in receiving yards in college football. And he wasn't even supposed to be the starter this season going in. He's not a blazer per se, but he pulls away from people. It doesn't look like Matt's freshman, Debbie deep dive freshman, Keenan Christian, or Kristen, however you say his name, when he gets the ball, he looks fast. Like, he just, I mean, you can tell the kid is shot out of a cannon. Gainwell, I mean, he pulls away from people, but he's not just some blazer. But this kid is ultra talented. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. Sixth in college football in rushing. As a redshirt freshman, he's going to be eligible in 2021. He's making that 2021 class even more intriguing. He looks really good.
Before you move on, Gainwell, you're right. His stride is not, it doesn't look like the burner stride, but he's got a stride that makes him fast. So it's an interesting a run, but you can see it. It kind of, I had a comp in my head, like the running style, not running back. But low key, like Memphis is what, 6-1? What is going on? What is happening? No, dude, this kid's a stud. I like that call, man.
You know who he strides like? It's sort of like Joe Mixon. He just, in my, when I'm thinking about like how Joe Mixon moves, he kind of strides like Mixon. Mixon, his feet don't move really, really fast, you know, those choppy quick steps, but he's sort of got that kind of just that he's smooth, man. He's smooth, and I like any running back that can catch the ball. I'm a fan of. You got to be able to do both, and that kid can do both. But going deep, and I'm not even going to try to do the deep noise like Matt does. I'm not 6'5" Deltron over here, so my voice will sound stupid. But I'm going to talk about Omar Bayless, all right? That is my deep dive player. And Dwight kind of made fun of me because he put, is the nation's leading receiver really deep? And I'd be interested to, how many of y'all even have heard that name before? Plays at Arkansas State, leads the country in receiving yards with 993, 10 TDs. He's one of the top leaders in receptions with 53. I mean, he's crushing everybody. You know, Sage Surratt and Antonio Gandy-Golden and Devin Duvernay, all these guys who are leading these statistical leaders at the wide receiver position. But it's this kid out of Arkansas State, a redshirt, 2015. So he's been in college for a long time. And he hadn't really done – he's been all right. His best statistical year was last year. He had 39 catches, 566 yards, and two TDs. And then he's just blown up this year. And if you go watch highlights of Arkansas State, literally the quarterback just gets the ball and just launches it deep. And there he is, like, catching deep balls. He's averaging almost 19 yards a catch. It's either – it's one or two things. He does – I don't believe he has the full route tree. He's either burning – screen, and then he's just creating yak. He's 6'3", 207. So anytime you get somebody that's leading the country in receiving, and I hadn't even heard this kid's name. He's a deep dive prospect, not a freshman, not a sophomore, not a junior, not a fourth year senior. Omar Bayless from Arkansas State. And it's hard to find those highlights on YouTube as well because nobody watches Arkansas State, not to offend anybody from, we do a lot of state offending here. I don't want to offend anybody from Arkansas, but we don't really watch a lot of Arkansas State games. But go check out Omar Bayless.
I was just about to say, I hope he's not related to Skip Bayless because I can't stand that guy. I just wanted to offend Skip this week. We're going to go different routes. So. All right. Ray searched a little bit there for some South games of the week, but you did find a couple. It's a kind of a quieter week down south. But Ray, can you take us through a couple of them that you're watching and the prospects that you're watching?
Texas TCU, I talked about Jalen Rager. Let's see what Sam Ellinger, Keontae Ingram. I believe Jordan Whittington. I don't know if he's – lost season for him really stinks. But Roshan Johnson, quarterback turned running back. He's looked better than Keontae Ingram this year, so I'm interested to see how they perform. And TCU also has a couple of running backs to pay attention to. Oklahoma versus Kansas State. We all know about Jalen Hurts. It's just, again, it's fun watching talented quarterbacks play the position, and it's fun watching Jalen Hurts. He really has improved as a thrower. Still has got mechanical things that he has to work on, but it's fun watching him. But Charleston Rambo, wide receiver, redshirt sophomore, somebody that if he does not declare, which he is eligible for the draft, if he comes back for his redshirt junior year, he's going to be a monster once Lincoln Riley recruits some other transfer quarterback to come and win the Heisman Trophy for the fourth year. So Charleston Rampo, let's watch him. And then South Carolina versus Tennessee. And we all know the quarterback from South Carolina, Ryan Helinski, who I think is going to be a stud here in the next couple of years. Brian Edwards looks phenomenal. But there's a tight end from South Carolina named Nick Muse, number 9, all right? I had no clue who this guy was, and then I was watching them versus, I believe it was Georgia a couple of weeks ago, and every time this kid got the ball, which wasn't much, I mean, he had serious juice at the tight end position, and I was like, who is this Nick Muse guy? And I looked up his stats. Last year, he had like 300 and something receiving yards, and for a tight end in college, that's really not bad at all, and he's on pace for something similar like that this year. So big kid, Nick Muse, number 9. It's always hard finding tight ends for a dynasty team. So if you can kind of get ahead of the curve, look at Dawson Knox. I think he had like 9 catches all of last year for Ole Miss. And, you know, he is a pretty valuable young dynasty asset at tight end for the Buffalo Bills. So Nick Muse is somebody that I'm very intrigued about. And I hope nobody, I hope they just skip this part right here because I don't want them to know about Nick Muse because I want to try to get him when he declares.
Dawson Knox also had zero touchdowns. But real fast, go back to Oklahoma. So you're saying De'Eric King to Charleston Rambo next year is going to be the thing, huh? Dwight says no.
It's Rattler time, baby. They better give Rattler the ball, damn it. I like him.
Well, I think we're heading up north, Dwight, man. What's the game of the week?
It is this should have been the nation's game of the week. Then Wisconsin went and lost. Dingbats. So number 13 Wisconsin goes into the horseshoe to take on number 3 Ohio State. Still should be a fun game. Could be. I'm leaning more toward Ohio State most likely blowing them out in the end, but I'm hoping Wisconsin can keep it good for a while. We've seen Ohio State, despite what they've done this year in the past couple years, they have at times been burned by running backs, you know, like Anthony McFarland last year putting up 300 yards against them. They have a propensity for getting gashed offensively, particularly by running backs. So hopefully that gives Wisconsin a chance to be in the game. And then watch J.K. Dobbins go back. You know, he's one that's climbed up the board quite a bit, you know, after a rough sophomore year. And I know Ray put some videos. He put some videos on, didn't he, Ray, about J.K. recently, I thought.
Yep, correct, sure did.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I can't. I'm sorry, guys. I can't keep up with Twitter sometimes. But, yeah, so it's going to be fun to watch the Dobbins versus Taylor. And then Justin Fields, you know, this is a chance for him to, you know, put a signature game on his resume as well, because he's been kind of shuffled to the back of the Heisman race a little bit with the emergence of Burrow and then, you know, Tua and Jalen's huge numbers. And it feels like everybody's kind of forgot about Justin Fields, and he's still got 22 touchdowns and only one pick. So, yeah, he's still doing some crazy stuff up there. And they have a chance to have a signature win here against Wisconsin. Should be a fun game, at least for a little while. But I think ultimately Ohio State will pull away in the end. Tons and tons of pro prospects here. You know, you figure Master Teague will probably get in the game a little bit. I'm not too high on any of the receivers there in Ohio State. KJ Hill has been a little bit underwhelming. Chris Olave, I think is how you pronounce it, has been their leading receiver. And I don't see him being a special guy at the next level. But it should be just a fun game to watch. And I think Wisconsin will be eager to bounce back and try to erase that taste out of our mouths after that terrible loss last week. So
I just like the RB showcase, man. You know, it's a good little back and forth, man. It won't be boring on when either team has the ball. So I'm excited for that. You know, you'd like to see Wisconsin go up and give them a game, but you know, hopefully they're not dwelling too much on last week. So yeah, it should be a fun one, man.
And then my Debbie prospect of the week, I have seen so many questions on Twitter about this guy. I think Ray, you've answered some about him, and it feels like he's kind of sort of like getting his name out there. And he's a small dude. Somebody didn't write down his stats. KJ Hamler from Penn State. I think he's only like 5'6", 170, 5'7", 170. He's a little guy. But, man, is he so much fun to watch. He's their leading receiver this year. He's caught 32 balls for 563 yards, 7 touchdowns. Contributes in all other ways. He does have, I think, 24 rushing attempts, returns punts, returns kicks. He's just – I think he's the most electric guy in college football right now with Rondale Moore off the – on the shelf, and I put Jalen Reagor in purgatory because that's kind of where he feels like he's at right now. But Hamler's just so much fun to watch. And I was reading, like, about his backstory and the way he carries himself, like, off the field. He's just a really, really fun guy to root for. So much fun to watch. He doesn't shy away from hits, which is crazy at his size. You know, he doesn't try to – he says he's not afraid to make the play in the punt game if it means he's going to get hit, as long as he makes the play. And I just think that's a great way to play. You can't be scared of the game. You know, like when the Saints tried to call out Tariq Cohen the other night, you can't be afraid of it. It's just – you know, you're a little guy, but who cares? You make plays, you know. He's so much fun to watch. He obviously, because of the size, it allows him to slip, you know, and through creases and dart, and he's so unbelievably quick. And Matt Miller compared him to Hollywood Brown, which I didn't think was the greatest comp in the world, because I feel like Hollywood's not as versatile as Hamler has been this year. So I don't know. He's just a fun kid to watch. I don't know if he'll ever make it in the NFL, but, you know, there is obviously not a lot of success with guys that size, but the game seems to be evolving toward, you know, maybe he could make it his niche in there. So just a fun guy to watch. I don't know, Ray, what did you think of KJ when you watched him?
He's more Deshaun Jackson at Cal to me than Marquise Brown. Hollywood didn't, I think they had him on punt return a couple of times, but CeeDee Lamb was the punt. You give him an inch, he's gone. I mean, this kid is fast. He he reminds me, and maybe it's because of his, it is because of his speed, and he wears number one. He's more D-Jax at Cal to me than Marquise Brown. He's electric. He's fast. I think there is a role for him at the next level. I could see him getting drafted pretty high, to be honest with you, because of his skill set. And we see it right now. Speed kills. College, NFL, speed kills. Now, one of the problems with him, and I've kind of deferred to people who watch Penn State quite a bit, is he's had some history with drops, and maybe that's because he's got small hands or whatever. But he tends to let the ball hit the ground a lot. And, you know, if you're going to be a diminutive wide receiver, you need to have sure hands. And that's what DeSean Jackson did have. He didn't drop any passes. So I think he's electric, and I would love to have him on my dynasty rosters because that speed to get utilized at the next level.
What's cool too is you mentioned him in the same conversation with Rager and Moore. And I read that after Rondale Moore was ruled out for the season, Hamler actually reached out to him, kind of gave some condolences, like, man, sorry to hear it. And that's just a good character, things that you want to see in a guy like that, right? So, you know, kind of like a, hey, big ups to you, man, you know, but, you know, I'll be holding this torch over here when you get back kind of thing. It's, you know, so I love to see that. And dude, dropping a D-Jax bomb like that, like, you just totally perked my ears up because I wouldn't have thought that until you said that. Now you said that, that's all I could think of. So, no, great, great athlete, great football player. All right, so going down to the freshman of the week.
This is a guy who's really starting to make some noise. I honestly thought that of the freshman running back in Iowa State that Jarrell Brock was going to be the one that emerged, but Breece Hall has looked absolutely unreal the last couple games. Like, he just all of a sudden has kind of put his stamp on the role and said, this is my job. Last two games, he's against West Virginia, he went 26, 132, and three touchdowns. And then last game against Texas Tech, he went 19 for 183 and two, plus caught three balls for 73 yards. Just amazing. Like, he is so, so good. Like, he's very, very slippery. He has a really good breakaway speed. He's not a power guy. Like, he won't, you know, run over people and things like that. He's one of those guys that will break tackles by being, like, elusive and taking the right angles. I was really impressed with the angles that he took. And then when he would get that little crease or that edge, he has a gear. Like, you hit that second gear and just explode. I actually put in my notes, good loud, because that's what it's like. Like, holy crap. Like, it's just like watching. It was really impressive to watch him. And he just, the way he stopped on a dime a lot too. Like, he would change directions very quickly and then still hit that gear right out of the stop. He's been really impressive. I'm really hoping to watch him play a lot more. And Iowa State's doing some good things there. I know Matt Campbell's got, and there's all this talk of him going to the NFL, but man, I hope he stays there because Iowa State's making some noise this year and led by this kid. And Brock's amazing as well. Then we've talked about Brock Purdy before also. So yeah, I really like Iowa State a lot. And Breece Hall has looked unreal the last couple games and coming following right on the heels of David Montgomery. So entirely different type of player, but still just ton of fun to watch. So he doesn't run like a freshman, that's for sure. I was really impressed with watching him the last couple games. Did you get a chance to watch him any of those last few, Ray? Or
I did, and I just saw a lot of highlights from him, so I haven't been able to study him in depth. When I'm watching Iowa State, it was really checking out Brock Purdy. I wanted to watch his progressions and development as a quarterback. But he has definitely stood out. I've seen a lot of people tweet about him, so I'm excited to really dive into him later on.
Right. I'd like to watch him more and more. Yeah, like I've watched like the condensed version of both of those games, and I was just thoroughly, thoroughly impressed by what I saw. So then my deep prospect. Ray, didn't you ask me about this guy a couple weeks ago? And I feel like he's kind of came out of – like he's a guy that I've had – what was that, Ray?
I said I did. I asked you about him.
Right. I did. And then, like, he's a deep dive guy, Darnell Stewart from Michigan State. I didn't realize he's ninth in the country in receiving yards with 683, 46 grabs, four touchdowns. I guess that's what kind of scared me when you asked him. It's like I've watched Michigan State and I've watched Darnell Stewart for several years now, and he's a good receiver, but he's not a great receiver. And to see that he had put up those numbers was pretty impressive. But at the same time, I could see him translating well to the NFL as like a slot type guy that gets just about everything that's thrown his way. I love his hands. He always seems to be like in the right place at the right time. kind of like Brian Lewerke's safety valve. And there's a really, really huge need for that in the NFL. And you've seen guys, you know, that can just find that spot and find that guy and be that security blanket. So he'll never be a guy that will, you know, light up the scoreboard, you know, and have 1,000-yard seasons with 9 touchdowns and stuff. But he could just be that really solid role if he lands on the right NFL team. You know, he's 6'1", 200 pounds, really good size. You love the sure hands. You love the route running. Just like a true possession receiver. And just, you know, there's lots to like about him, but I don't see any, like, elite traits. But just, yeah, so he's just – when I was going through some things and, you know, sorting through some charts and everything, and I was surprised that he had that many receiving yards, because he's – like I told Ray when he asked me about him before, he doesn't pop. Like, he's, like, a good receiver, but not, like, a phenomenal receiver. But, yeah, he still could have a spot in the NFL, though. So, yeah, I got to get some Michigan State love this week. So we've lost 2 in a row, so that's I got to get it where I can get it. So – there's some other intriguing games up north this week. Notre Dame travels to Michigan, which should be a pretty good game, depending on which Michigan team shows up. If Shea Patterson can finally figure out that he has, like, several of the best wide receivers in the country, that would be nice. But Notre Dame's playing great and should be able to run away with this game. Curious to see, you know, Ian Book, Cole Kmet. You know, there's a lot of guys in this game that could. And then Michigan, you know, Zach Charbonnet and – yeah, just a lot of Devy prospects in this game. Probably a game that'll watch more for the Devy prospects as opposed to the actual game itself. Penn State goes to Michigan State, which could be a potential trap game for Penn State, although, you know, the Penn State's strength lies in their rushing offense, which is Michigan State's strength is their rushing defense. So it should be an interesting game. I think Hamler and Sean Clifford will be the huge difference in this game, and I see Penn State, you know, ultimately running away with it, although I'd love to see Michigan State break their losing streak. And this one I kind of stole, just so we can talk about Chuba Hubbard, because we haven't talked about him yet this week. That's the longest we've went in an episode without talking about Chuba Hubbard. Oklahoma State travels to 23 Iowa State, which should be just a fun, fun game. Tons and tons of scoring. Chuba Hubbard, Tylan Wallace, Breece Hall, Brock Purdy, these are guys that I want to tune into this game to watch. This one should be a fun, fun game, a barn burner. That's what they call it in Iowa State. Got to get our Iowa jab in, right? A barn burner. There you go. So I don't know. Any of those games you guys, like, super intrigued about? Right.
Any game that's got Tylan Wallace and Chuba Hubbard, I'm interested in. I mean, that, 100% with you, man. That game should be fun.
Dude, Chuba is crushing. Man, I looked at how many rushing yards he has. It's ridiculous. I mean,
it's like 300 more than the next one down, yeah, isn't he?
He's already over 1,200 rushing yards this year.
Right.
It's when you look at the box score and he has like one, I believe he had like 172 or 170 something versus Baylor, and that was like a down game. Like, that just was unimpressive. Like, it's ridiculous. It's Mike Gundy is ridiculous for how much he's running the kid. I really hope he declares. But
yeah, no kidding.
He needs to get out, but I'm intrigued by that one. And Michigan's got another running back too. I know Zach Charbonnet is the touted freshman, but I think it's Hassan. I can't think of his name. It's escaping my mind, but he's looked really, really good back there for Michigan as well. They've got another running back with Charbonnet, and it's not True Wilson. It's not right. That other guy, it's Hassan something, but he looks really good too.
All right, we did get a couple listener questions. I kind of threw this out last minute, but we actually had one question right there toward the last, right when we were getting ready to record too. But our boy Brandon Lejeune, who's, you know, doing his did Debbie work as well, says, I like Eason more than Herbert. Am I insane?
Brandon may be insane, but not because of his Eason over Herbert take. I don't know, man. Herbert leaves a lot to be desired when watching them. You know, we've talked about this multiple times, and I remember 2 years ago, they were talking about he's going one-on-one to the Raiders or whatever it was. I'm like, okay, let's really get into this thing. You expect more from him week to week. You don't get it. You can see why there's so much hype behind it and everything else. I don't think it's insane to say that. I still think I got Herbert over Eason, but I wouldn't say you're insane for taking that take there. I don't know, man. Herbert, I wish Herbert does more to pop and to solidify his spot, but you know, I think he's clearly out of the quarterback 2 deal now. It feels like, where before he was duck there, right? I don't know. So I don't think you're nuts, Brandon. I'm not sure how to take that one either, but I wouldn't fight you on that one.
Right. You just see the way Eason just plays with more fire and more passion.
Like, yes.
You know, he makes good plays. He makes dumb plays, you know, but he's only started for a year, basically. And you see a lot. You see the talent, and you just see he's – and Herbert just is like a robot. Like, I hate watching his facial expressions. I'm like, dude, get excited. Get pissed. Do something.
Yeah, I'm, you know, out, like, on Herbert. I'm
yeah.
I think he's a talented kid. And you got to take those Roto World updates with the grain of salt. But there was one that came out last week that said – Justin Herbert is going to get a GM and a head coach fired. Like, that was the headline that scouts are like, he is going to get somebody fired. I think he's talented. I just don't see that. I don't know. There are a couple of these quarterbacks that I think at first I thought they made the right decision coming back. And I know Jake Fromm had no choice, but they probably should have. I don't know. I would take the upside and the unknown with Jacob Eason probably instead of just taking Justin Herbert off of name value if I was put in that position. Quite frankly, I'd take Joe Burrow and Jalen Hurts over both of those guys, just me personally.
Right. But then I think Herbert could also land in the right situation and be an adequate NFL quarterback.
True.
You know?
True.
If he ends up drafted in the second round and he doesn't have the weight of the world on his shoulders – you know, and he's on a good team with decent wide receivers and a good offense, you know, and a good defense. He could be all right. He could be a good NFL quarterback for 10 years. But I just don't think he's going to be that, you know, we're looking for the next Pat Mahomes, the next, you know, Deshaun Watson. You know, he's not going to be that. So, all right. Mike LaValle asks, what are our biggest Devy risers and fallers midway through the season? That's easy. It's Joe Burrow and Chuba Hubbard. Next question. I don't know if you guys got anybody else to add to that. That's two that stood out for me, for risers at least. So.
Yeah, Chuba was my biggest riser too. You know, I've had to admit being lower on him than I should have been, but he's clearly jumped up the highest. I feel like the last time I did my rankings too, there was somebody that fell quite a bit. Now it's escaping me.
Well, I had Chuba high going in the season. He was my Devy RB5 going into the season. So Joe Burrow for one, and then if we go outside of a super flex from Najee Harris is a really big riser for me. I thought he was okay. I didn't – maybe because he just didn't get the opportunity to do what he's doing now. Josh Jacobs was the pass-catching back last year. Damian Harris was the primary ball carrier. So he's a big – one of the bigger risers for me. And on the – conversely, and Matt, I'm sorry to say it, but and maybe I have not watched enough, but Eno Benjamin is one of my biggest fallers. I had him – I think at one point he was like – my RB3 or RB4.
Yeah.
And he's fallen considerably for me. And I don't know if it's the situation, you know, I don't know if it's Arizona State, if it's really him, but he's fallen down quite a bit for me. He's behind Dobbins and Najee Harris and Chuba Hubbard and Cam Akers. So he's taken a pretty steep tumble for me.
Yeah.
I actually was right before you said his name, I pulled up my rankings on Dynasty Happy Hour, and for sure, Eno was my biggest faller. And I hate to say it, but, I mean, let's just keep it real, right? The other big faller for me was, well, Tyler Johnson's fallen. Not a ton, but he's fallen for me for a little bit. So those are the two kind of maybe noticeable ones.
Another riser that's caught mine is Devin Duvernay. I had him crazy low, like 60, 70 low. And I don't know where I have him now, but I really like what I've seen out of him this year. I think he's improved his stock quite a bit.
I got one more riser that, and I checked on DLF, the white. We didn't even have this guy. He's not even on there, I don't believe. Sage Surratt. Like, how did we? Yeah. Holy crap. What?
I was wincing, waiting for you to say Jake Smith, baby.
No. Sage Surratt, Wake Forest. That kid is, he's good, man. If he stays, the 2021 class of wide receivers maybe better than 2020, and that's saying a lot. But if he stays in, it could be better than 2020.
I almost trapped you into saying Jake Smith. You almost—it's been an hour. It's the longest I've ever seen you go without. Anyway,
he dropped the ball last week. It caused an interception, and he fumbled one, I believe.
Yeah. All right, and our last question. This one came in like literally 5 minutes before we recorded. T Conrad asked, rank Judy and Dynasty against current wide receivers. I think we did something like this a while back, but
I got the list up. So you want to play the game? I'll start off. Okay, so we'll start off. I'm on Fantasy Pros just for reference, but DJ Moore is the 15th ranked Dynasty receiver now. Would you rather have Judy or DJ Moore?
Judy.
Well, Judy's not even on wide receiver one, so DJ Moore.
Okay, so we're going to split this then. So Kenny Golladay, Dwight, or Judy?
Judy.
Man. Okay, Ray, we're going the other way. Brandon Cooks or Judy?
Judy.
Okay, so he's like 15 for you, 15, 16. Okay, Dwight, you going Stephon Diggs or Judy?
Probably Diggs there.
All right, so you got him at wide receiver 14 based off of these rankings here. Not a, so Cooper Kupp's jumped up a lot in the last couple months. You guys taking Cooper Kupp or Judy?
I'm taking Kupp.
Yeah, I'd say probably Kupp.
He's been filthy. And then what about somebody who's a monster but getting older, Julio Jones or Judy?
Judy. Still Julio.
Hold on. What did I hear from Ray's side?
In Dynasty, I'm taking Julio. What is he, 31?
Yeah, I don't know.
No, I think he's 30. Just turned 30.
He just turned 30?
Yeah.
I think I would take Julio.
Oh, yeah. Give me Julio.
But I guess, give me Julio. I guess if your team's total trash, I would take Judy. But if a decent team, I would take Julio.
I don't know where he's at. Where's Tyler Boyd at?
So Tyler Boyd on this list is 23.
All right. I'm a Tyler Boyd fan, man. I have him higher personally. And if you told me right now Tyler Boyd or Jerry Jeudy, I'd probably take Tyler Boyd.
Whoa, so you got Boyd at like top 15 then.
I just don't trust that team, man. That's my team. I hate it. I know.
Yeah, I don't trust it either, but hell, we don't know where Jeudy's gonna play at. We don't know where he's gonna land at.
Who's your number one receiver then right now?
Tyler Boyd had 15 targets last week. Like, he only converted a couple of them, but he had 15 freaking targets. Like, give me that. Who's my number one wide receiver in the class?
You know that, Matt. Come on. CD, baby.
Have I ever heard of him?
CD Lamb.
I'm just pulling up Dynasty Happy Hour now, too, just to see a little comparison. Okay, so Chris Godwin, who's like the hotness. Chris Godwin or Judy?
Pass.
See what I'm saying? It's so hard to do this. It's so hard to do.
Okay, so Ray, Chris Godwin or CeeDee Lamb?
No, Chris. I'm not taking any Devy guy over. Like, Chris Godwin is 23 years old. Give me him. Give me the young. That's the thing. I think sometimes people get so consumed with the college prospect. If you've got any legitimate NFL star under the age of 25, I don't care who the college player is, I'm taking, unless it's like a running back, I'm taking the proven NFL wide receiver over the college guy like 9 times out of 10. Very rarely would I take one of these guys over a Chris Godwin, a Cooper Kupp, even a Tyler Boyd. I think there's a line that starts, Tyler Boyd, Kenny Golladay range. But I'm not taking any of those guys over those NFL players. And that's why I tweeted out a couple of weeks ago, I'm going to clean up in rookie draft season in some leagues, and I'm not even going to make a pick. Like, I won't even have to pick anybody. I can get my one running back. I'll get Jonathan Taylor or DeAndre Swift, and I'll sell everything else and just acquire Kenny Golladay's and Chris Godwin's and Cooper Kupp's. And I'll walk away a winner in my dynasty rookie draft and walk away with one player, if any.
Well, I'm with you, man. It's interesting when you get into like the guys like Robert Woods, who's 27, but is proven to be a valuable asset week to week. It's those kind of guys that hopefully you're not relying on to be your wide receiver one or two on your team. But if you could be moving those for, what could be middle of the first round picks where you could be landing a Judy or a Lamb or whatever, because people are going to go heavy running back. I'd be super interested in that. Then it's a little bit different when you start talking about these older guys like the T.Y. Hiltons and everything like that. But, like Lockett's in that category from like 15 to 24 or whatever. I'm not the biggest fan. If you could flip him for one of those guys, game on. So, not to pull the card like team dependent or whatever, but I mean, really, like, what's the team look like? If you if there's no chance to win a shot in the next year or two, whatever, move them. You know, don't think twice, get it going. And, you know, maybe some of those guys, you can get that player and some. So, gosh, you know, it's hard.
I know we're running long, but I really believe in 2020, if there's some blanket strategy, if I had to go one way or the other, I'd rather get my running back and quarterback in 2020 and then, you know, maybe get like a Brandon Ayuk in the third or take a shot on a Reggie Robertson Jr. later in the draft and wait until 2021 and grab my receiver in 2020. If I were going to go one or the other, I think 2020 is running back strong, at least where we stand today. And you can get you a developmental wide receiver prospect in the third or fourth round and maybe sell your second, or if you've got multiple firsts that are later. Like, I don't think I would want – and even when we did our mock draft, once we got to the back half of the first, like, I'd much rather be at the front half and get Taylor or Swift or ETN. And then if I've got a punt till 2021 for a receiver, I have no problem doing that.
Well, and you all know the game, right? Like, last year's receivers are cheap as dirt right now. Like, go get Paris Campbell for nothing when he just was going at the tail end of first round, 8 months ago, whatever. So, yeah, go buy those guys cheap for some other assets on your team. Get the running backs, get the quarterbacks, and keep that thing moving.
Right, right. Love it, guys. Let's wrap this puppy up. Ray, tell everybody where they can find you on Twitter and what you got working on, man.
On Twitter, at RayGQ, Destination Devi. You can just at DDP, doing prospect play video breakdowns. I just have fun, you know, watching. People ask me, do you watch all those games? When you're, like, scouting players, it's not a fun – it's not like you're watching it for enjoyment. You're looking for certain things. You're normally – there are good people in the community. Certain players in their plays, their individual plays, so – And you talked about the kid from Iowa State. Like, I don't watch everybody. I can't. Like, and if anybody says they are, they're lying, and that's BS. And it's okay to say I haven't seen that guy. I haven't started digging into 2022 guys yet. So, prospect play video breakdowns, writing on DLF, DDP comes out every Monday, and this show right here. I really enjoy talking to you guys and interacting with y'all. I really, really look forward to this during the week.
Awesome, awesome, man. Matt?
Yeah, no, I'm going to echo Ray there. This is my highlight of the week. This is the way to kind of sit down and look at football, not through, you know, like Ray just said, and you're not sitting there watching popcorn or eating popcorn and putting them down on Saturdays. We're watching a little bit different, so sometimes it feels like work, but this is the fun part, really, to kind of digest it, talk about it, get other people's opinions on it. So this is the main outlet for me. I love doing this with you guys. Thanks to the Dynasty Happy Hour for putting this up. But I have now just pulling up my rankings. I have some updating I need to do there. So look forward to a soon to be update on my Dynasty or Devi rankings on the website. I'm on Twitter at Commissioner McGriff. Love interacting, talking to y'all. So, you know, continue to tag me in your questions and trade talks, and I'll give you my opinions whether you like it or not. But at Commissioner McGriff on Twitter.
Right, right. You can find me on Twitter at FFPeoplesChamp, writing for DLF as well. And you can find this podcast at Devi Happy Hour on Twitter. Email us, DeviHappyHour@gmail.com. And everyone have a great weekend of college football. We will talk to you guys next week.